Anything from the city standpoint that would hold us up? Either Wendy or John?
No, we are ready to go.
Very good. Very good. I'll check in with Wendy one last time, see if we expect Mayor Pro Tem Bright to join us in a moment.
I believe so. Just a moment. Let me check. And I believe she's here.
Very good. Then we will go ahead and call to order this city council meeting of Monday, July 26, 2020 for the city of Grover Beach. It is 6 o'clock and we are still virtual. So this evening, and I'll have our city manager mention that in just a moment, but this is our call to order. So, and in compliance with the state and county shelter at home orders, meetings will be held by teleconference only until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. It's just a reminder, members of the public may provide public comment during the course of the meeting by calling in at 805-321-6639, and those phone lines are currently open. So I do want to take a moment and as part of our moment of silence this evening, I do want to remember two people, one of which is, if I remember correctly, Chief, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, a fallen officer from the Valley. So who we thank him for his service, and his end of watch occurred over the weekend. And we know that you're wearing the black band of mourning for that, in remembrance of that fallen officer. And then we also do remember today Robert Red Davis. He was a Morro Bay council member who passed away over the weekend. He had a love of Morro Bay and serving that city. So I did have the pleasure of working with him on several regional committees, and had an even better time and more fun talking to him about his love of travel and his adventures. So please join me in a moment of silence in his honor, as well as the fallen officer's honor. Thank you for joining me in that moment of silence. And now I'd like to turn it over to our Chief of Police, Mr. Peters. Chief Peters, to do the flag salute, please.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Put your right hand over your heart and say along with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief. I appreciate that. So that'll take us to our roll call. So, Madam City Clerk, if you would do the roll call, please.
Councilmember Miller.
Here.
Councilmember Robert.
Here.
Councilmember Rushing.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Here.
And Mayor Lee.
I am here as well, so we do have a quorum, and so we will continue. And this takes us to our closed session announcements. So I'll turn it over to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, for any closed session announcements from prior meetings.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. No, we do not have any this evening.
Very good. Then I'll bring it back to the council for agenda review, where at this time the council can review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. So let's see if there's any members of the council that do want to make any changes. So I'm not seeing anybody raise their hand. I would like to put it up for consideration by the council to see if we can move the let me get to my agenda and see which item it is, but perhaps consider moving item number 7 to after the The consent agenda. So item number 7 is a development application 10-03, a time extension for the Grover Beach Lodge for a project located at 55 West Grand Avenue. Is there any concerns with moving that item? Mm-mm. Hearing none, I'll go ahead and accept a motion to proceed with the agenda as modified.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Very good. So we will proceed with that modification to the agenda. So that will take us to our ceremonial calendar this evening, where we do not have any ceremonial items. And that'll take us to our presentations, where it's my pleasure to introduce again Chief of Police John Peters for the Police Department 2020 Annual Report. Chief, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, the council and community. It's my pleasure to present to you tonight the 2020 Grover Beach Police Department annual report. The report is a summary of the activities that have occurred within the police department in the city of Grover Beach. And we are going to go ahead and have a PowerPoint presentation for that. And there we are. Next slide, please. 2020 was a very unusual year for everyone. We all experienced the COVID-19 pandemic, and for the first time in our lives, having to shut down daily life as we knew it. The impacts of the pandemic were felt worldwide and at home. Our department was prepared with the personal protective equipment that we had already issued to all the personnel. However, we did have to buy quite a bit of additional equipment. The police department stayed operational with a slight modification to the lobby procedures, but otherwise we were able to still patrol the areas and make contact with personnel or customers out in the field. And we did activate a new online reporting program during this process. So this report will highlight how the year went. Next slide, please. This is an overview of the police department with an organizational chart. The police department is authorized 32 positions, 22 of those which were sworn last year. As we know that this year, that's actually been increased, and we appreciate that support. The department had an approved budget of $4.7 million, and our officers answered a little over 21,700 calls for service. That's for our residents, 13,600 residents and tourists that come to the area quite a bit. Interestingly, even though with the COVID pandemic and the lockdown orders, the call volume was an 11% increase over the 2019 calls for service. So even though people were staying at home, we were actually busier than the previous year. Next slide, please. Just to give you a breakdown of the police department, the police department is divided into two different divisions. The first division is operations. The next few slides will actually highlight what these two divisions do. The police department operations division The operations division has 17 people assigned to it in 2020. The division is managed by a commander who oversees 4 sergeants and 11 police officers and 1 community service technician. Those officers all respond to the calls for service that are in the field that come in daily through the dispatch center. In September of 2020, Commander Sim Miller retired after 18 years of service with the city, and we had a recruitment process, and we were very lucky to bring on Commander Brian Millard in Sim's retirement. So a very competitive process. We had some great candidates, and Brian really shone through with over 20 years of law enforcement experience in our region. Next slide, please. Most of the statistical data that the police department produces is in the operations division. The FBI tracks law enforcement statistics by each agency submitting a monthly report to the Department of Justice and the FBI. There is over 18,000 agencies that submit reports to the FBI. The FBI releases a full report at the end of this year. It's actually going to be probably September of this year when they're anticipating the full report to be released. But they do give us a glimpse by releasing a preliminary report. The FBI's preliminary report showed nationwide a 1% decrease in violent, or what we know as Part 1 crimes. They also showed a decrease in property crime by 8%. The interesting note in the preliminary report was that auto theft actually increased by 6.2% nationwide. So keeping those statistics in mind, let's go ahead and go to the next slide and we'll look at what Grover Beach experienced. In Grover Beach, we actually did quite a bit better than the national average. Our violent or part one crimes were down by 26%. Our property crimes were down by 20% in contrast to the national average. Also, our auto theft was down by 30%. So even though it went up nationally, it did not in Grover Beach. These statistics must be taken lightly, however, because there was a pandemic and there were lockdowns. And so we really won't know the full impact of those numbers in comparison to 2019 and 2021 numbers until at the end of 2021. That being said, as you saw earlier, we did see an 11% increase in calls for service. However, we did see a reduction in overall crime of 13% within Grover Beach. What that tells us is that having more officers available on the street helped us to create a safer community. In some of the instances when we're dealing with theft, we did see some mail theft crimes that were occurring that were pretty impactful for the community. We did experience 13 incidents last year in 2020, and we did make a couple of arrests during the year for some of those. We've also, so far, have made several arrests for porch pirate thefts that have been going on this year. So we did also see an increase in catalytic converters, something that wasn't on our radar in 2019, but did start to pop up in 2020. We had six of those thefts that we were working on. Unfortunately, so far this year, we've had 22 catalytic converters stolen. So next slide, please. As this graph shows, we're going to move into the traffic statistics. And overall, we had an 18% reduction in traffic collisions from 2019. That is also backs up. We had a reduction from 2018 to 2019 as well. So for the last 2 years, we have seen a reduction in traffic collisions, which has been beneficial for the community, obviously, with pedestrian and motorcycles and bicycles and motorists just traveling our roadways quite a bit. Right now, we're not in a position to fully deploy a motorcycle officer. However, that is something we're looking at doing later on this year. In fact, we are having a testing process for that currently within the police department. We do have a motorcycle that is in the garage that we'll be able to utilize for training purposes and some patrol purposes. So we do look forward to getting that position actually up and running probably by January. Next slide, please. Continuing with our traffic statistics, you can see that we issued 957 citations, with the common violation, the most common violation being stop signs. Cell phone violations or distracted driving was the second one, and driver's license violations was the third. Speeding has not been an issue. We've had a recent speed survey that came up that did show that some roads needed some adjustment, but most of the roads, the 85th percentile, was within the posted speed limits. So we're doing okay on that, although we do understand there's other areas that we're going to be concentrating on, especially when that motorcycle becomes an active part of our department. Next slide, please. Our support services division is managed by Commander Angelo Lamone. He oversees the Communications Center, Detective Bureau, and the Records Bureau. The Communications Center has an authorized staffing of six. Currently, it's down to three as we go through the transition with merging with the city of Pismo Beach and contracting the dispatch services to them. Hopefully that will be completed by January of 2022. Right now, Pismo Beach is doing the hiring and training of new personnel to take on those services. In the Detective Bureau, we had three authorized positions that were supervised by a detective sergeant. And the detectives handle most of our complex cases that our department sees. They manage the cannabis regulatory program for the department. And in our Records Bureau, we have two technicians that handle all of the lobby traffic and the reports, and they also handle all of the evidence processing for the police department. Next slide, please. The Detective Bureau, as I said, had three detectives assigned to it. They were supervised by a sergeant. They investigated 129 complex cases, including a murder case that occurred early on in the year. They also manage the cannabis program. The cannabis regulatory program that we offer helps the industry become successful within our community. We are very proud to say that it's been a safe industry, that we have had little to no problems. We've actually only had two instances of internal employee theft attempts. They actually didn't get completed. And that's due in part to the great level of security that the industry deploys in each of their facilities and the partnership that we have working with them. In fact, during a recent state inspection, the state commented that our cannabis regulatory program was a model program to look at. Next slide, please. Sorry, that's kind of what I discussed already, the cannabis regulatory program. Also, since the program has been active, we've done over 800 background investigations on employees and owners there. So that has been the a key component to our program. Next slide, please. The Records Bureau is operated by two technicians. These technicians handle the lobby activity as well as process all reports, citations, public records for requests. In 2020, the Records Bureau processed over 1,950 reports and 950 citations. The two technicians also operated the police department's state-of-the-art property room, where they logged in 2,495 items in 2020 alone. They also disposed of 4,911 items. And part of that disposal was returning items of stolen property to their owners, and that occurred in 291 cases. So we're proud that we're able to recover stolen property and return that to the owners. Next slide, please. The communications center of the police department, as I said, has six authorized positions, but is going through a transition right now where there's only three. The dispatch supervisor, lead dispatcher, and one dispatcher are currently employed. In 2020, the communications center handled over 21,700 calls for service, which was an 11% increase over 2019. The center experienced that significant staffing shortage, and that's what created an opportunity for us to partner with the city of Pismo Beach for nighttime dispatching services. The partnership worked really well, and as a result, we are going to regionalize dispatching emergency communication services within the two cities at the city of Pismo Beach. We look forward to this partnership because it is going to enhance not only officer safety in the field, but our time responses to calls for service within both communities. So it's looking to enhance the opportunities of what we can provide for services to both areas. Next slide, please. Some of the personnel accomplishments I wanted to highlight this year is Sergeant Juan Leon was recognized by his peers and his command staff as the Officer of the Year. Sergeant Leon is one of our department firearms instructors. He's a less lethal weapons instructor and a veteran of the San Luis Obispo County Regional SWAT team. Sergeant Leon is in charge of our field training program for newly hired police officers, and he oversaw the training of six new police officers in 2020. Sybil Hollis is our Civilian Employee of the Year. She is a tenured veteran of the department, over 20 years of service, and she has helped complete an exhaustive property and evidence audit that we do every year. Sybil has been instrumental in the department's transition to the new California incident-based reporting system, as well as other state and federal requirements that have come down on the department for this year. So next slide, please. Another proud moment is the presenting of life-saving awards. We had two of those this year. Sergeant Sonny Gerber and Officer Sonny Lopez were each presented the life-saving award. The life-saving award specifics can be found within the annual report, but I will say that Sergeant Gerber performed CPR on an unconscious person, and that person survived as a result. In Officer Lopez's incident, He applied a tourniquet to an injured person who is bleeding excessively from an artery, and the application of the tourniquet saved that person's life. Next slide, please. The year of 2020 was unprecedented, as I mentioned earlier. Our staff worked hard each day and under very difficult conditions and exposures to COVID-19 at times. We did have one staff member contract COVID-19, but thankfully has made a full recovery and has returned to duty. Our staff members donned personal protective equipment and took measures to ensure that they and their coworkers and members of the public and even their families were not exposed to COVID as much as possible. And so this was a unique situation where I thought it was warranting of providing a COVID-19 service award. It's a special recognition that I provided to all personnel within the department because of their dedication to the community and continuing to do their jobs as best as they can under these difficult circumstances. Next slide. In the final slide, I wanted to highlight a section of our report that we say thank you to the community of Grover Beach. All during COVID-19 pandemic, we received an outpouring of support from the businesses and residents. People were bringing us food items, N95 masks, sanitizer, and basic supplies, and plus cookies and other goodies that we were able to keep going. Again, we appreciate the community. We are committed to our community, as our motto says, and we appreciate the fact that they came over and helped us in a time of need. So that concludes my presentation for this evening, and I'm available for any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. I appreciate that report. Nicely done. So let's see if any council members have questions or comments. And just if anyone's curious, any public comment on this item, we will put that under the regular public communications. So there won't be a specific public comment item on the presentation. So but let's turn to our Mayor Pro Tem first and see if she has any questions or comments for the Chief.
No questions, but certainly a comment.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Chief, for a very comprehensive and positive report. I continue to be incredibly proud of our PD. As a mother of a son employed by local law enforcement, I know firsthand what the trials and tribulations and that our officers face daily, and I truly appreciate what they do and what they deal with. Our cannabis program is just exemplary. The response times that you quoted in the report is something that I must say makes me feel incredibly safe, and something that I'm going to brag about to other people in other cities. And I just really want to thank you for what you do and how far you have brought our department in the years that I have lived here. And I would please ask you to pass along my gratitude to your department, please. I just can't tell you how pleased I am. And so thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Miller for any questions or comments.
Thank you, Mary Lee. Wow, 2020 certainly was a year like no other. It certainly requires effective coordination and planning in order for a department of 32 to serve a community of over 13,000 residents. So thank you for your leadership of our police department, Chief Peters. I think you mentioned 800 background checks were done for the cannabis industry. And I recall a discussion that I had with Mr. Bronson months ago, where some information was shared about the amount of time it took for a background check to be completed for a staff member within the industry. And I think we had figured out a way to significantly cut that time down from, I think it was like months down to weeks. And it was very impressive. And I just want to acknowledge your efforts in being able to do that. So thank you for the work that you do, and thank you to your officers and being able to keep River Beach safe. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Robert for any questions or comments.
No questions. A couple of comments. The I think the response time in your report's inaccurate. I could swear you respond twice that fast. And I speak from experience. And this is from experience even before I even considered being on city council. I've had response of within a couple of minutes if I've called in, a police officer was available. Just last week, recently, I think four or five police officers showed up at my house because of the alarm went off and I didn't call it in. And I came out and they were all standing out there. And I was like, whoa, how did you do that within less than 5 minutes? They were all there. So thank you for your protection for our whole community. And thank you for all your hard service. And please pass that on to all the officers that we have on staff. You do a fabulous job. And thank you for the great report. And I know last year was a little confusing with like lockdown, their numbers, but I think our numbers would have still gone down even with the lockdown that wasn't in place. It's because of the outstanding job y'all do, and the whole community thanks you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Rushing for any questions or comments.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. No questions. Just continuing with my fellow council members. My interactions with the police department over the last several years have always been amazing. To Council Member Roberts' point, the last time we had an incident, I literally think it was about 2 minutes and 40 seconds by the time somebody showed up at our house. And then 2 years later, when something was stolen from our car, we were actually called by the city of Grover Beach and the police department before we even know that something had been stolen. So we had picked it up before we would ever have even known that it was something that was gone. So thank you very much. And to Councilor Miller's point and Mayor Pro Tem Bright's point, this past year has been amazing in so many different ways. And the way that you have come together and continued to do your work and show up every day is incredibly, incredibly fantastic. And as a member of the council, I just want to say thank you. I appreciate you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Very good. And I'll kind of echo people's comments and say that I have no questions, but I did want to just express again gratitude for the entire police force. And then just kind of highlight a couple things that you didn't mention. During the pandemic, obviously, we did have a series of either protests or marches or activities that where there were opportunities for escalation. And I just want to give the police and all your entire staff kudos for using de-escalation techniques and really getting to the point of where you could have a dialogue with those members of the public that wanted to express themselves, and to do so in a manner that was preserving their rights, but also preserving and making sure that property rights were acknowledged as well. So I want to say thank you for that, and also the training and the technology that our police department uses to be able to do what they do. I think we're a testament to a number of techniques and processes that the chief has implemented during his course of time as our chief, and I think it kind of permeates positively through the entire to the entire organization. So we will always get those occasional I don't like the police comments, but I think for the most part everything that our police force does is in the name and the name of the community and in the benefit for the community and for the safety of others. So I just want to kind of echo that last sentiment and say thank you, chief. And please thank your entire force as we continue to fully staff our police department so that we can do that outreach and that community safety that is so vital and is so requested by all of our community members and our businesses. So thank you all around.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Very good. So we have had questions and comments. Chief, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to close the presentation with.
I just, as a closing remarks, I'd probably say thank you very much to the council, not only this council, but the previous council. And you have all supported us very highly and looked over everything that we've done and added the staffing where necessary and listened to the community and their concerns. So I appreciate that. And we look forward to continuing good work.
Thank you, Chief. And actually, I do apologize. I actually did have one question, but I think you're going to be able to answer this without a problem. So I know one of the really great things that that you did before the pandemic was Coffee with a Cop. And I know that was something that did need to be put on hold for that time being. So any plans to bring that back in the near future?
Absolutely. And in fact, before we're going to bring back Coffee with a Cop next month, we're actually hosting National Night Out on Tuesday, August 3rd at the 16th Street Park. So we will have some equipment out there and a lot of officers and a lot of good stuff for everybody to come out to. So that'll be our first, I guess you could say, reopening of getting meetings back into the space. And just come on down and meet with us there. And then definitely watch our websites, our social media for the Coffee with the Cop. We'll be having those announcements soon.
Very good. And August is right around the corner. So actually, literally, the National Night Out is a week from tomorrow.
Correct.
Very good. Okay. Great. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that. I will go ahead and close the presentation and bring it back to the council. We're going to go into public communications, but I'm going to take a prerogative for just a moment because I forgot to have our city manager kind of mention, as I mentioned at the top, we are still virtual. We had early indications that we were going to be in person at tonight's meeting, but we did make the decision to go to stay virtual tonight. I wanted to give the city manager an opportunity to speak to that, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Mayor and council members. Yes, we were fully planning to resume our in-person council meetings for the first time in a year and a half with tonight's meeting. We were working towards that. We had the technology in place. We had the room ready to go, the people's room to bring back in the council. And unfortunately, given the recent rise in new cases across not only our county, but the state in general with the Delta variant, we opted to push back by a month out of an abundance of caution, given that it is an indoor space and we wanted to see how this next month would go to boost up our vaccination numbers and to see if we could get a better hold on this current variant as a community. And so our plan is to resume in-person meetings with the August 23rd council meeting, the next regularly scheduled meeting, and we very much hope to be able to do that and resume our in-person discussions and dialogue once again at that point.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that that update as to why we are all still virtual tonight. And that will take us to our public communications, where at this time the council will allow public comment with additional communication, if necessary, allowed after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. We will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So if there is any member of the public that wants to speak on public comment, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if we have any members of the public on the line tonight.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I appreciate that. Then I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council for our consent agenda, where we have a number of routine items that are listed on the agenda for consideration as a group, and the recommendations are noted in parentheses. So let's see if there's any member of the council that has questions on an item on the consent agenda. We'll start with Councilmember Rushing.
No, I have no questions. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller?
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts?
No questions. Thank you, Mayor.
And Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
No, thank you. No questions.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and open up public comment under the consent agenda. So if anyone has any comments on that, please call in at 805-321-6639. And after we hear your comment, we may pull it for further discussion or at the end of the consent agenda topic. So, Madam City Clerk, do we have any members of the public that want to speak under the consent agenda?
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment on the consent agenda and bring it back to the council for a motion, please.
I'll move that we adopt the consent agenda as written. Does that work?
That does.
I'll second that.
That's my first one. Thank you.
Very good. Nicely done. We have a motion and a second. Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
And Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. We do have an approved consent agenda this evening. Thank you for that. And now we will come back to our public hearing items. And we did kind of adjust the order to where we will go to item number 7 first, where we have a development application 10-03, our time extension request for the Grover Beach Lodge project located at 55 West Grand Avenue. For those that do want to provide public comment on this item, please call in at 805-321-6639. And with that, I'll turn it over to our senior planner, Castillo. Good evening, sir. How are you tonight?
Thank you, Mary Lee. Good evening, council members. I'd like to just make this brief presentation in regards to development application 1003, which is the Grover Beach Lodge time extension. Next slide, please. So the project, City Council did approve the Grover Beach Lodge project in 2014. This project was amended in 2017 to add a roof deck, as shown in the following slides, and in July 2018 to eliminate the standalone conference center and reconfigure the on-site parking. The project is located at the end of West Grand Avenue within the Pismo State Beach. The approved project consists of 3 hotel buildings with 144 rooms, a restaurant, 4,000 square feet of meeting space, and a roof deck. The City of Grover Beach is not the lead permitting agency to this hotel. However, the project is in the lead by both the California State Parks and the State Fire Marshal's Office. Additionally, permits are required from Caltrans, State Fish and Wildlife, the Union Pacific Railroad, and 4 additional utility companies. Next slide, please. So as you can see on the screen, this shows the configuration of the proposed project, building 1 being the largest of the project. And then the reconfiguration of the parking lot is shown on your left-hand side. Very thin is in that thin print there is fins, and then the additional 2 supporting buildings, both on the north and south. Next slide. Again, this is a building 1 front entry, just a quick exhibit of what the Grover Beach Lodge does look like. Next slide. And this is the rendering of what the building 1 restaurant entry would look like. Next slide. So the applicant is requesting a 2-year time extension as a result of delays caused by COVID-19. The revised schedule provided by the applicant indicates that the plan review and permitting process will be completed by October of 2022, with hotel construction beginning in March 2023. This revised schedule is reasonable and attainable given the time you need to complete the plans and receive the permits. As a reminder, again, is the city is not the lead agency, and we do we will have some bit of review in terms of the public improvements. But again, the improvements for these plans are really in the state's hands, and along with COVID-19 delaying not only this project, but other projects as well. Next slide. So the Planning Commission did conduct a public hearing on this item on July 6th, and there were no public comments at the time. The Planning Commission did recommend to the City Council that they approve this time extension. Similar to those findings, staff is recommending that the Council approve an additional 2-year extension for development day application 1003 at this time, because it is an economic development project that is very important within the city's goals, policies, and procedures. Next slide. And so with that, I'm going to open up to questions for the council.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Castillo. A great succinct presentation. Always appreciate that and get the information across in a timely and expeditious and professional manner. So let's turn to our Mayor Pro Tem first and see if she has any questions of Mr. Castillo.
Thank you, Mayor. No, I really don't have any questions regarding this issue. Thank you.
Very good. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Miller.
No questions for me. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
No questions either. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Rushing.
No questions here either, sir. Thank you.
Very good. And this is a public hearing. I will go ahead and open it to the public for public comment on this item. And so if there is anyone that wants to call and speak on this item, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I understand we do have Mr. Tom Bell, a Pacifica representative on the line, and I'll give him an opportunity to speak first. Good evening, Mr. Bell.
Good evening. How are you?
Good, thank you.
It's nice to attend this meeting with all of you. I just want to advise you that we've regretted the unfortunate delay we've experienced with this COVID-19. The severe drop in personal travel has caused hotels, as you might imagine, to suffer tremendous losses over the past year. And most of us are looking at new and renovation projects, and those that have merit and those that don't. And of course, we feel Grover Beach is a project with a lot of merit. We're excited about building this project, and we're committed to the planning and construction. Our design consultants have been updated, and they're on standby to resume the design as quickly as possible, as soon as we receive approval to go forward. I'm available to answer any questions the council may have that haven't been covered by the senior planner's report, which was very thorough. So anything that I can help with, I'll be glad to answer.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Let's sure. Let's see if there's any questions for Mr. Bell. I'll start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you, Mayor. No, I do not have any questions. This all makes sense to me. So no, thank you.
Very good. Next, I'll see if Councilmember Miller has any questions.
Thank you, Mary Lee. No questions. We've seen, you know, lots of projects delayed because of this pandemic. So no questions.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
No questions either. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Rushing.
Not a question, but if I could make a comment.
Perhaps after the public comments, we'll, as we bring it back to the council for deliberation, we'll have comments. Okay. And thank you. And I don't have any comments or excuse me, questions for you either, Mr. Bell. So we appreciate you being here. Thank you for your continued interest in moving forward with the project. And I'll turn to our city clerk. And I do understand we do have Jim Luskatoff from State Parks on the line. Let's see if Mr. Luskatoff wants to speak on this item.
Good evening, Jim Luskatoff from California State Parks, just here to support the project and to answer any questions if you have them.
Very good, thank you, sir. So always good to see you back. Welcome back. I know you kind of took a little bit of a hiatus there, so good to have you back involved.
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mayor.
Very good. By unmuting of microphones, let's see if any member of the council has questions for Mr. Luskatoff. Not seen anybody unmute themselves. Thank you, sir, for being here, and we'll call on you if we have any additional questions or comments.
Great, thank you.
Very good. I'll turn back to our city clerk and see if there's anyone else on the line for public comment on this item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close the public hearing and bring it back to the council for further comments and deliberation. So, Mr. Rushing, or excuse me, Councilmember Rushing. So we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mayor. So, Mr. Bell, thank you for your comments on the issues of the last year. And I know that hotels have been crazily hit, especially those that are attached to conventions and everything else. What I will say is thank you so much for bringing the project back at this point. In working with other hotels throughout the area over the past several years, I can tell you that the Central Coast is the place to be for hotels at this point. Being perfectly situated between Los Angeles and San Francisco, an easy drive for a day, people are flooding here, and our average day rates for hotel rooms are through the roof, and I'm hoping they continue to be so. So thank you very much for your application here, and we look forward to having you. Thank you. Cheers.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Very good. Let's turn to Councilmember Robert for any comments.
I'd just like to say thank you also, and hang in there. I mean, this has been going on for over a couple decades, And we've all crossed our fingers, everyone sitting here since before city council members, and we hope that this all goes to completion in our lifetime.
me too. I look forward to coming visiting you there.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller, any comments?
Thank you, Mayor Lee. Like I mentioned earlier, we've seen so many delays with all projects from labor to supplies. So I'm not surprised to see this delay. We'll see this project through. And as everyone else said, thank you. And I think that's it.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any comments?
Well, I think my colleagues have really said it all. So I'm ready to make a motion if you're ready to hear it.
Very good. Let me just make one quick comment that I am looking forward to having this process restarted again and looking forward to construction being started. I know Councilmember Bright at the time, now Mayor Pro Tem Bright, you're the longest tenured person who has had involvement in the project from the city standpoint. So between you and I think we're hoping to get some ground broken in the next year to year and a half. So and I'll also encourage anyone listening there from out of the area, we do have a train station that lands in Grover Beach, and we are and there is going to be a direct flight from San Diego to San Luis. So yep. Gives every opportunity for people from north and south to come visit a great lodge when it's constructed. So with that, I'll bring it back to the council for a motion, and I'll turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. And you can do it car free if you want.
Yes, you can.
So I will just say I will move staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So we have adopted a motion or a resolution to approve a 2-year time extension for development application 10-03. And I do want to say thank you again to Pacifica for staying involved in the project, and also do want to say thank you to the state for their continued involvement as well. So we'll look forward to seeing the next steps in the process.
Thank you.
Very good. So that will take us back to our regularly scheduled agenda, which is item number 6, which is the second public hearing on the creation of a district-based city council election system. And before I turn it over to our city manager, Mr. Bronson, for a staff presentation, I'll invite those to call in on this item at 805-321-6639. And Mr. Bronson, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council Members. Just some brief comments before I turn the floor over to Dr. Daniel Phillips with National Demographics Corporation. This is the second of our 4 required public hearings in the transition towards district-based elections in Grover Beach. If you recall, the first public hearing was at the end of June, and had a lot of information about the process, why we're doing this, the background of the California Voting Rights Act, and introduced the concept around creating communities of interest and how to begin thinking about creating districts. Tonight's meeting is really to hone in on these, quote, communities of interest, and to get clear council direction on key areas that the council believes should be kept together in ways that would help really define council representation in the future, so that staff and the consultants can have clear direction in identifying potential areas, working with public submissions as well through the process, so we can come back to you in hearing 3 in January with some draft maps that reflect the council direction and guidance around areas to keep together. So that's the intent tonight. We have quite a bit of time and space potentially for this, so I really encourage council to ask questions about the process, about how this works, as Dr. Phillips can provide more information as desired by the council. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Phillips.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Okay.
Yes, we can. Dr. Phillips, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you. And happy to be with you. So this is going to be the second presentation on districting. And so next slide, please. So just as a refresh, there are three types of election systems that cities like yours can implement. And you have, up to this point, used the at-large system, where voters across the city elect city council members. And now you are moving to the by-district system, that third election system, where a city council member has to live in a certain district and can only be voted on by residents of that district. And the reason you're doing this is because the California Voting Rights Act was written to specifically encourage this electoral system. Next slide, please. And just as a reminder about the CVRA and why it, the basic message here is that it has made cities and other jurisdictions, it's much easier to be found liable for racially polarized voting. And so because of this, cities like yourselves are trying to escape the threat of litigation by moving to this by district system. Next slide, please. And just a summation of the many jurisdictions that have tried to fight or settle these types of cases and all the amounts of money that have been spent. And to this date, no jurisdiction has successfully fought against it. Next slide, please. So the districting process looks as follows. And you'll see here that we already had our first public hearing on the 28th of June, and this is our second. The second of two that are held prior to the release of draft maps. And so these are supposed to educate on the process and solicit council and public input on the neighborhoods and communities of interest within your city. And then later on in next calendar year, we'll get into actually considering different draft map proposals. And then final map adoption will be in March. Next slide, please. The rules and goals for drawing district lines are as follows. First is to follow federal law in that the district should be as equal in population as possible, that you should observe the Federal Voting Rights Act by not diluting the voting strength of protected class citizens, and that you should not racially gerrymander in the sense of making race or ethnicity the sole or paramount factor. It should be a consideration in order to follow the Voting Rights Act, but it shouldn't be the only one. Now, number two is the state law. And state law has a rank order of criteria. So if you can't follow all of them, then the higher ones, like one and two, should be observed as being more important. So the first is that the districts should be contiguous and that they're just one piece, not multiple pieces. The second is that you should not divide neighborhoods or communities of interest, which are socioeconomic geographic areas that should be kept together. The third is the district line should follow easily identifiable boundaries like major roads and railroads, et cetera. And number four is that the district should be compact in that they do not bypass one group of people to get to a more distant group of people. And then you have this prohibition about not favoring or discriminating against a political party. So just nonpartisan considerations there. And then this third block are goals. So these are not something you have to do, but something that you may choose to do. One is to respect voters' choices by only putting council members in separate seats, incumbents, council members in separate seats. So you avoid pairing off incumbent council members and thus forcing one of them off the council and leave it to voters to decide whether they deserve another term. And then you have this future population growth. So if you are expecting a major housing development on the horizon, then you can account for that slightly. Next slide, please. So to define a neighborhood, you first need to ask what are the neighborhoods in the city, and secondly, what are their geographic boundaries? And so here are just some examples of what those physical features might look like. And in the absence of public testimony, planning records and other similar documents may provide definition. Next slide, please. Now, beyond neighborhoods, we have this term communities of interest, which is a little more elaborate. You have this first question is what defines a community? It's a geographic area that has some shared issue or a characteristic attached to it, a social or economic interest that is impacted by city policies. And then the second question is, would this community benefit from being included within a single district for purposes of its effective and fair representation? If you can answer yes to the second question, then it should be kept together in one district. Now, communities of interest may not include relationships with political parties, incumbents, or political candidates. Next slide, please. This is a summary of your city's demographics, and you can see that in 2020, we estimate that your city had a population just over 13,000. And you can see that as far as the citizen voting age population is concerned, which is what the courts have decided is the main factor when it comes to satisfying the Federal Voting Rights Act, your city had a 21% Hispanic population and much smaller percentages of other protected class voters, such as Blacks and Asians. And then if you look to the left here, you'll see that each of the four districts must contain about 3,400 people in order to observe the equal population requirement. There is some wiggle room. You can have it plus or minus roughly 5%, but that's the guideline there. And you can check out the Grover Beach story map for maps of some of this demographic data that is displayed on the table here. Next slide. So the story map is actually one of several mapping tools that we've made available for different purposes. So if you go to groverbeach.org/districting, that will take you to a place where you can see all these tools listed, and you can click on the story map link to learn about your community and look at different maps showing the demographics. The interactive mapping tool will be similar to the story map. It will just not be laid out in a story-like fashion. It will allow you to check and uncheck the data layers that you want to display at a certain moment. And then we have paper and Excel-based simple draw draft map tools. And so these are tools that will allow you to draw your own map and calculate how many people live in each district to make sure that your districts have roughly equal amounts of people living in them. And then we also have this this online mapping tool that we're still waiting on, but we are trusting that will be available once the official census data comes out, which will probably be in September. But whatever tool you choose to use, we welcome your maps, and please feel free to submit whatever you want. You can even submit a map of your neighborhood or a map showing just one district that you think should be drawn if you don't want to draw all four. Next slide, please. So the goal of this public hearing is to talk about what are the neighborhoods of the city and what are their boundaries, and any other notable areas that should be kept together, such as communities of interest. I'm also here to take any questions about the mapping tools, and I'm happy to go through any of them that the council might want to go through in more depth. And then finally, I would like to ask that there be some council discussion and even action, specifically a vote on areas that meet the AB 849 definition of neighborhoods and communities of interest. AB 849 refers to the Fair Maps Act, and that's where we get that state criteria from. So if you can vote on a list of neighborhoods or communities of interest that should be kept together in one district, that would be very helpful as we, so that we can consider those in, as we draw our first draft maps once the census data comes in. So thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you very much, Dr. Phillips. Appreciate that presentation. And then just a quick question before I turn it over to council members for other specific questions. In the staff report, for those that were following along, there were a number of demographic slides, and I'm anticipating that those will be found on our city website. Is that correct, City Manager Bronson?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Mayor. We have the full presentation from the June 28th meeting, as well as the exhibits attached to the staff report on our website for the public to look at.
Very good. And then Dr. Phillips, just kind of a quick follow-up on that one. So so those are all going to be in that story map. Is that correct as well? So those will, as part of the Excel spreadsheet, when it does get populated, those will be available?
The story map is one of several mapping tools that are available. So the Excel tool is its own tool, and then the story map is different. The story map is not something you would use to actually draw a mapping plan of the city. It's something that you can look at to see what the zoning areas are and any other areas of interest in the city, like school attendance areas. And I'm happy to briefly go through that if you'd want, but if you can remember what I showed last time, that can suffice as well.
Gotcha. Let's see if there's other specific questions, but it might be a good refresher before we get to public comment on it to have that refresher for that. So let me turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright first and see if she has any specific questions this evening.
Well, come back to me, please, Mayor. I'm still trying to process exactly what he's asking.
Very good. Okay. Very good. We'll turn to Councilmember Miller and see if she has any specific questions.
Thank you, Mary Lee. I am trying to locate our notes from our last meeting where we talked about specific how we define neighborhoods, and I guess I'm having trouble defining what we're supposed to be doing today.
Gotcha. Okay. So then, okay, let's see if there's any technical questions, and then we'll get back into a discussion of kind of where Dr. Phillips is hoping that we get to this evening, and I'll kind of put in my own understanding and comments of that as well. So, but let me turn to Councilmember Robert for any specific questions before we get to that discussion.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. Doctor, I think I heard you say in your presentation that you're still working on the maps that we talked about in the first the meeting in regards to being able to pull up particular maps and see the street names. Are you going to be able to do that?
That should be possible to show now.
Okay. Yeah, that was my main concern. I just went to particular maps, and when I zoomed in, there were no street names, and the ones that were zoomed in on were, maybe it was my computer, were very fuzzy. So you said you were going to be working on that. I just wanted to verify that you are. So thank you very much. That'd be helpful.
Very good. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Rushing for any specific questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dr. Phillips, not sure if you're the right person to ask about this, but I've had a general question about the districting process in general, and I'm thinking you're probably the person to ask because you're kind of the guy for that. But we're a relatively small city, and we're breaking our city down into chunks of approximately 3,300 people. What is the scenario for a city if, when we have our districts built out, if there is no one that applies to be a candidate in that district in a specific election?
Yes. So as far as I'm aware, that the procedure in that case would be that you, the council, would appoint someone who lives in that district to serve out that.
So essentially, it would be the same situation as a vacant seat, and the council would have to decide the process that they would move forward with.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Fantastic. And then I certainly have some comments about communities of interest going forward, but those are my only concrete questions for you now. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you. And I just had a quick follow-up question to Dr. Phillips on that, on what Councilmember Rushing just asked. So it would be, we could do actually a special election or an appointment process or whatever other legally available options are out there for us. Is that correct?
You may want to check with your attorney on this, but as far as I'm aware, when it comes to having districts, as long as you maintain the districts as they're drawn and make sure that whoever is representing that district in the end is living in that district, that would satisfy the California Voting Rights Act.
Very good. Mr. Hale, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I think the fact that you create a district and nobody steps to the plate who wants to put papers in for running, then functionally you have a vacancy. So I think you would choose the government code provisions just as you normally do in the context of a vacancy, and either choose to appoint and then you can pick whatever process you wish or do a special election. I think either way would work.
Okay. Very good. So I know there's some thoughts on not having anyone run and then have a number of people come out for an appointment that have not gone through the vetting process. So that might be an interesting decision for council at that moment. So other question I had, maybe a little bit of an abstract one, but let's say, for instance, our existing districts, excuse me, our new districts are drawn so where existing seats are occupied. So is there any availability for someone for a district, let's say they live two blocks apart, so it's going to be very difficult to split a district based upon that continuity that you mentioned earlier. So is there a grace period, or is there some level of time before all the district seats need to be occupied by people that live in those districts?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the way it will work is that whatever you decide will be the districts that will have seats up in 2022. Those will be the first to be filled, and then the remaining city council members will remain at large until 2024, when the other two districts will be filled. And so from 2024 onward, there will be an official representative for each district. But in the meantime, there will be two district representatives and two at-large members.
Okay, so just to confirm then, let's our two seats that are available in addition to the mayor's seat are Councilmember Robert and Councilmember Rushing. And so those two seats are up for election and have to be filled by people who serve in those districts. But Councilmember Miller and Mayor Pro Tem Bright, because of the fact that they'd be at large for another 2 years, may or may not need to actually reside in the district that would have the election coming up in 2024. Is that a safe way to say that?
Yeah, so they were elected as at-large members, and they will remain as at-large members for as long as their term continues.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that. I think that was the questions I had. Oh, actually, one question on, I spent a little time kind of drawing some paper maps last night, which I'll determine whether to turn in at a later date. But it got me to counting, and I'm wondering the units that are in the exhibit. So can those be broken down further in order to balance the districts, or is this basically a tool to get close to that 3,400 voter count?
Yeah, so let me address one thing first, and that is at this point in the process, no official draft maps can be drawn. So that means either by the council or by us as your contracted demographers. So if you are drawing now, just maybe wait a little until the official census data is, and then like 7 days after that in order to submit it. But to answer your question, there, in fact, if I can share my screen, I don't know if I have that ability. Let's see. So, oh yeah, I do. Okay. So if I go to the, can you see this here?
It is slowly coming up on my screen.
Yes.
Okay. So sure. this is the interactive review map. This is the mapping tool that allows you to display different data layers by checking and unchecking as you please. Now, one thing to note is you should see here that the street labels are visible. So I know one council member had was asking about that. So all the streets are shown. And then right now it has zoning areas, but you can look at school attendance areas as well, or where the coastal zone is, things like that. But in reference to your question, but also the amount of the citizen voting age population that is Latino, that's an important consideration. But in reference to your question about the population units, so if you click this, you should see these are the population units, and these are the same population units that appear on the paper mapping tool. And so these are just displayed on the interactive review map as well, in case you want to zoom in more to see them better, which I'm going to do by clicking the plus at the top left here. But if you find that these population units are too large and you want to break them down further, you can check this data layer, which is the census blocks. And so these show the number of people who live in each census block. And that's the finest, smallest level of resolution that the census provides. It doesn't have house by house because that presents privacy concerns. So this is the smallest unit available to us. And so you can, if you want, you can just forget about the population units and use these to calculate your district population totals, but you will have to manually calculate it yourself because the Excel tool only has is only based on the larger population units, which you can see here, which using their ID numbers, because if you're using the Excel tool to total up your district population numbers, you would need to refer to the ID numbers because they all have a particular ID, and that is how you assign them to certain districts using the Excel tool. And I can demonstrate that if you'd like, but if not, I will entertain any other questions.
Gotcha. Let's go ahead and leave the kind of the building of the maps for the future hearing data once we get into the attempt of trying to break down into areas of interest. But I did have one other question, and I think I know the answer, but I just want to have it confirmed. So talking about folks that live in particular districts, let's say that District 1, for instance, has no one that's running, but I happen to live in District 1. And so during that particular election, there's a possibility that the only person I'm going to have an opportunity to vote for in that case is the at-large mayor. Is that a correct statement in that scenario?
So I just want to make sure I understand the scenario you're envisioning correctly. So this is a hypothetical resident who lives in District 1. And you're talking about the 2022 election?
Correct.
Okay. So,
and that happens to be up for election in 2022.
Okay. So if someone is up for election in 2022, then they would get to vote for the District 1 representative.
Okay. And so if no one happened to run, then there would be, it just would show as a vacancy.
Yeah, whatever your procedure is for uncontested elections.
Okay, very good. And the last question is, this districting process is only for our general elections, correct? I mean, the county has its primary elections and its special elections that we might participate in, but it's this particular districting is only for the Grover Beach general election process, correct?
It is for the Grover Beach City Council elections, and so as these are November elections, that's what they will appear on the November ballot.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that clarification. So let's see. Just by a quick unmuting, looks like Councilmember or Mayor Pro Tem Bright, did you generate some questions?
Yes. Yesterday, I was just kind of messing around with the map process and kind of looking at like communities of interest, and particularly, for example, with apartments or multiple dwellings, and trying to figure out how we would get some of those so they could be included with other multiple family units, particularly those that are on Atlantic City, like at 14th and so on, because there aren't really many others over there. So without kind of making these weird types of configurations, I'm just not sure how we would go about getting them into a district with other neighborhoods. So how do you go about doing something like that?
Well, you do the best you can, and if it's easier when a lot of these apartments and multifamily dwellings are in a particular compact section of the city.
Yeah.
If they're spread out, then there's not much you can do, because these districts do have to be contiguous, and so if there's one part of the city where there's slightly more apartments or multifamily dwellings, then you can try to base a district there. But if it's not, if you recall a community of interest, the first aspect of it is it's a geographic area, and then it has a shared interest, social or economic. So you can't really have a community of interest of apartment dwellers across the city. It has to be kind of focused and concentrated in a particular section. Does that answer your question?
Well, I guess. I mean, it does. So geographic area is the number one criteria. Is that correct?
So when you're talking about the state criteria, the most important is that these are single pieces, so contiguous districts. And the second most is preserving neighborhoods and communities of interest. And so if there is a distinct neighborhood or community of interest that should be kept together in one district, you try to keep it together.
Okay. Because just because they are in that same community certainly doesn't mean that they have the same, they certainly may not be in the same financial, what am I trying to say? They certainly may not have the same educational background or the same financial background. They may go to the same school and they may live in the same area, but they certainly may not have the same educational background or the same, even the same interests, but they just happen to live in the same area. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. So a neighborhood would be something that people kind of commonly agree upon is like this is a neighborhood that we all have a common sense of belonging toward, and that it doesn't necessarily have to have a social or economic component to it. When you're talking about community of interest, you do have that more social or economic component to it. So if there's a particular part of the city where it's wealthier or better educated, then that might be considered a community of interest if it's really concentrated in one particular section.
Okay. I don't know that I made my point there, but.
And perhaps we can get into a kind of a further discussion as we come back for comments and maybe as we continue to develop that community of interest discussion. So, but I see Councilmember Miller, you unmuted. So did you have another question?
I do. I'm wondering if, Dr. Phillips, if you're able to give us feedback on specific proposals. So if we have a community member who has submitted a proposal to the council, or can we present that to you for feedback? You can look at it and say, well, that works because of this, or it doesn't work because of whatever reason.
Yeah. That is one of the reasons why we're hired, is to provide expert advice and input. We don't want to say that we favor a particular map and prejudice your opinion, but we can certainly answer your questions like, is this legally allowable? Does this satisfy the criteria as you see it? And questions like that, we're happy to answer.
Okay, very good. So was there any, I don't see any other unmuted comments. So let me see if I can, if there's anyone on the line for public comment on this item. So I'll open up the public hearing and invite folks to call in at, I almost buried my paper here. If you'd call in at 805-321-6639, we'll gather some public comments. And before we do that, perhaps the city manager might want to make a comment.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I appreciate the council's questions and thinking through how to do this. And just let me say from the beginning that this is not easy. This is a new area for us as a city, a new area for us as staff, and I appreciate what Dr. Phillips and his team are doing. So I can appreciate the council's thoughtfulness in trying to put your arms around what this means and how to do this. And I think this is an area where we're still evolving and still going forward. At the end of the day, again, final maps don't have to be done until next spring. And we really won't have the maps to you to really get into and review until January. And that's the time where we'll be sharing not only the public maps, but also Dr. Phillips' analysis of those maps. So to answer Councilmember Miller's question further, yes, we will be engaging NDC in that effort, but it won't happen until later in the process, so that we can really have that once we get more maps submitted, and we expect more maps to come in over the next few months going forward. But I would just say, for the council to think about, we won't get to perfection in the districts, but progress in having four districts that are our best shot as a city in creating communities of interest that really bring in council representation at a smaller scale in areas that the council believes really reflect areas that should be kept together for districts and that are geographically distinct to the best of your ability. I'm looking at a map right now, and we have two areas in the city, just for one example, multifamily housing. We have two areas that are higher preponderance, one just south of Rockaway to Farrell from 10th to 6th Street. That's one area, just to the west of Gerber Beach Elementary School. And then the other area is just north of Grand Avenue, to the city limits, east or west of Oak Park and to the east of 14th Street, so around the skate park, that area. It may be difficult to create one district with both of those areas combined, but I think council can combine that with other factors to try to best create districts that meet your needs. And just to answer Councilmember Miller's point from what direction the council provided last time, you had some different ideas that the council came up with. Looking at north, south, not just Grand Avenue as the defining line, but really spanning across Grand Avenue as true communities of interest. You wanted to look at maybe renters versus owners. Maybe that could be a factor in creating communities of interest, the percent of rental versus owner-occupied housing. That could be a factor you look at. School district boundaries, something else to consider as well. So those are some ideas the council tossed out back in June. I think for today, it's really about crystallizing, nailing those down, and giving us direction of what's most important. These are all perhaps key factors for us to consider, but what is most important for us as staff and consultants to help guide our work in coming up with some examples and knowing that you can still manipulate and change those once we bring them to you in January to arrive at the final map at that point. Just wanted to kind of talk through that process as I see it. And today it's really about honing in on what are the most important variables and factors for these communities of interest that reflect the council's interest today in guiding our work over the next few months.
Very good. I definitely appreciate those comments and perhaps an opportunity to kind of have us go up to our 30,000 foot view level in this viewpoint rather than getting down into our puzzle making endeavor. So because I think as we can kind of provide some of that larger thought process, will meet the intent of what Mr. Bronson was mentioning and what Dr. Phillips is trying to get us to look at this evening. So again, let's open this up to the public, see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on this item, and you can call in at 805-321-6639 and give us your feedback on the process, the concept, the communities of interest, and I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see if there's anyone who has joined us tonight.
No, we have no one on the line.
Okay, very good. So I will close our second public comment period on this item, bring it back to the council for discussion. Perhaps in the vein of which Mr. Bronson was kind of guiding us, and Mr. Phillips has mentioned, perhaps I can kind of throw out some opportunities for discussion. And I know, as Mr. Bronson said, we did have a desire to not have specifically Grand Avenue be a district boundary, and so perhaps we can kind of maintain that north-south desire based upon other items. A couple items that I'd like to potentially put out there is we do have a coastal boundary, and I think one of our communities of interest would be a coastal commission influenced area. I don't think we've got 3,000 people that are 3,200, 3,300 that live in the coastal area, but I think that might be a good boundary to kind of draw from. I know it that would run the entire length of the west side of the city and perhaps move its way up into a little bit of, towards the east. But let's see if that's an idea that folks have for community of interest. We did talk about renters versus owners last time, and I think Dr. Phillips in the staff report presentation did provide a renters versus owners representative map, kind of where the preponderance is. So I think that's still a community of interest that might be good to have as a discussion point of saying, if we can have districts either with more owners versus more renters, that might be an opportunity there. The school district boundary was ironic in the fact that Mr. Bronson, again in the staff report, put in an exhibit that shows we literally have two schools that our elementary schools draw from. And so that's going to be a difficult one to break up, but it might be interesting to use one of the boundaries as the school district boundary, of course, that is, if I read it correctly, Grand Avenue, which then does compete with one of our other possible discussion items. So we might want to kind of gauge which one is more important to the discussion. Grover Heights, Grover Elementary, Breaking Point, or Grand Avenue. I think there's also an opportunity to use our central business district along with the surrounding areas as a community of interest. Those that get influenced by Grand Avenue and 13th Street might be another another discussion point as an opportunity to use as a grouping of a district. So I've thrown out about half a dozen. I'll throw out one more, maybe less than half a dozen, but I think we actually are in the north east portion of the city. We're a more hill-oriented community, where in the southwest we're a little bit flatter. And so that might be an interesting one to do from a from a walkability standpoint for candidates. If you live in the southeast or the western section, it's going to be easier to walk around and campaign. If you're in the some of the hillier sides, it's going to be a little bit of a hike. Bring your dog and or your hiking shoes and get some exercise. So I don't know if that's one of the items that we want to talk about, but it might be geographically hill versus dale type of discussion. So a unique one that I thought of that doesn't really would be difficult, and I haven't seen a map on it, would be our areas in the FEMA 100-year floodplain, or areas that that might have opportunities, greater opportunities for flooding versus other areas in the community. And so that might be a stretch to get there, but I've kind of thrown out a couple of them. Let's see if there's anyone who has strong feelings one way or the other. But I think our goal for tonight is to take four or five of those, provide direction to Dr. Phillips to use as they are kind of crafting some of the jurisdictional commonalities among that. So I'll turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Bright for her feedback.
Well, I have to say, this is really difficult for me because it just kind of smacks to me of like gerrymandering, where I just would like to just kind of go 1, 2, 3, 4 and make sure that we have just enough people in each one of those districts. I just don't like hand picking these things. So
maybe from a friendly dialogue standpoint. We're not the only ones who are going to be drawing maps. I think that's a great thing, in the fact that I think that's good guidance. But I think it'll be interesting to see once we give some of that upper level guidance, what some of members of our community come back with as well.
Yes. So that's why I'm glad that I'm not drawing this, because this is just a hard thing for me to do when they're saying pick this and pick that. And so I guess that's why I'm kind of having a hard time with all of this, trying to pick here and pick there. So I guess that's why I'm just kind of having a real hard time with all of this, where we have to pick this and pick that. So I am really happy that we've got this is going out to the public, and we're going to have all these different maps, and we'll see how this all plays out. So I guess so I'm maybe, not a lot of help here.
Okay, cool. And perhaps to paraphrase, because I'm going to try and capture each of our comments. So you're looking for more of a kind of a freeform type of no specific community of interest compilation. So more of a let's have the public provide us with their input, and then we'll kind of react to that. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, I believe that to me is more of the way that an election should be held. I don't think that one group of people, everybody similar, is the way that an election should be held. I think that that a normal course of the way that it should be is, I mean, that's just to me not the not the way that life is. So my neighbor is not exactly like me, and your neighbor is not exactly like you. So so I'll be interested to see how this all plays out. And I really don't want to have my hands in this at all. As somebody who represents the city, I don't think that I should. So it just seems to me that my hands should be out of this. And so I'm interested to see how it all plays out. So.
Very good. Let's. And I think that's that could be good direction. Let me turn to Councilmember Miller and see if input or direction from her.
Thank you, Mary Lee. So, I've been thinking quite a bit about this, and you know, there was a proposal submitted by a member of the public that made a lot of sense to me, and in this proposal, the groupings are the geographic groupings kind of naturally shake out to be two areas that are primarily residential and then two more that are high density areas with a lot of commercial properties. And I think the way it laid out just naturally made sense, where the representatives from those areas, those districts, would then be representing the constituents for those areas. And then they would be living in those areas, representing the interests for folks who would primarily be in the retail or tourism industry, or mainly residential. So it just naturally shakes out that way. And if we went with that proposal, it would, I don't know, I think it would just be easy. But of course, that's just one proposal, and I'm sure we'll get plenty more to think about. I don't know. I just think there's ways to do it that would just naturally make sense. So anyway,
I'm sorry. To kind of summarize there. So I think I heard, so kind of a grouping of single family residential, so with the possibility of kind of another grouping of high density commercial, and then a potential third grouping of kind of a tourist related grouping, which kind of could naturally fall out of the potential of our rocket scientist who provided our member of the public the map this evening. So, which obviously we don't want to get stuck there, because obviously, like you said, there's going to be lots of other people who are going to provide maps. But yep. Is that a fair assessment of your communities of interest?
That's fair.
Yeah. Very good. Let's turn over to Councilmember Roberts. And you are still muted, sir.
I'm sorry, Mayor?
Yep, we can hear you now.
Okay. I apologize. I'm going to have to go with Mayor Pro Tem Bright on this one. It does seem quite manipulative, and it seems like it's just a political stunt to me. And I'd like nothing to do with it either. I think a community that votes at large is representative, mainly because of the size of our city. We are smaller than Los Angeles or somewhere else where maybe districts make sense, but you know, we have a population that, to me, doesn't justify districting. And to Council Member Miller's thinking is, I've talked to a lot of owners, business owners, and the ones I know, a lot of them don't even live here. Most of those businesses and commercial areas don't live in Grover Beach. So I don't know how that plays out in the vote. It just seems strange to me. So I'm not for it, and I'm sure maybe there's a lot of things I don't understand about it. But to me, it's just something that we have to do. It sounds like, otherwise we're going to get sued. Is this based upon because we discriminate against people running for office, and areas don't get represented? properly. Just, I don't know. I'll certainly put in my thoughts when I can, but I have to be with Mayor Pro Tem Bright on this one. Thank you.
I'll put you down for that that compilation category. So I'll turn over to Councilmember Rushing. So let's see his feedback and just kind of more of a reiteration of kind of why we're here and to Councilmember Roberts' point, Mayor Pro Tem Bright's point. We as a community, I don't think we would have done this if we hadn't been compelled to. And so the proverbial train is we have a train station and the train has left the station. And so we are left with the task of trying to equitably district our community. And I think we've got an opportunity to provide that feedback where we can. But I certainly respect providing a at-will direction towards community members to see how those come up with districting as well. So let me turn back to Councilmember Rushing for his thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This entire process at its core is about making sure that portions of our community are represented throughout. You know, as it stands right now, if you look at the way our council is built out, it's fairly well spread out throughout the city, which is fantastic. That hasn't necessarily always been the case. So, you know, I encourage the thought of moving forward with this, but we're looking forward to identifying communities of interests. And I break that back down to the word neighborhood. What makes a neighborhood? What makes a neighborhood in Grover Beach, which is incredibly challenging, to be perfectly honest, because I feel like neighborhoods in Grover Beach change on a block-to-block basis. From one block to the next, it could be an entirely different set. To Councilmember Miller's point before, the maps that we've received have been fairly insightful, absolutely. But, you know, honestly, when you look at high-density, low-density, which is one of the points that I would like to make sure that we're thinking about, Mayor Lee, is that they are spread out throughout the city. There certainly is a higher density in one specific area, but they are spread out throughout. So it's not necessarily a neighborhood of that. I would also like to make sure that we're keeping an eye out on tenants versus owners. But again, when you look at the data in Grover Beach, there's a high percentage of rentership throughout the entire city. So at the end of the day, when I'm thinking about neighborhoods, I myself am the father of a 10-year-old. And I hate that I keep bringing this back, but at the end of the day, the things that bring people back to the table for a neighborhood is where their kids go to school. And keeping in mind Grover Heights and Grover Beach Elementary are an important distinction. Those are the moms and dads picking up their kids from school every morning and every afternoon and connecting across all the different boundaries that are involved. So I would definitely still want to make sure that school district boundaries are involved. And that was my 1, 2, 3, that school district boundaries, population density, and tenants versus ownership. Thank you very much.
Very good. So, thank you for that. So my only addition to that would be back towards the uniqueness of a potential district that is represented by the Coastal Commission, and the fact that while we are a coastal community, our coastal boundary is going to be influenced by the Coastal Commission and actions in there. So I would like to add to what Councilmember Miller and Councilmember Rushing have utilized as the criteria as a coastal boundary as a community of interest as well. So realizing that we've got commonality amongst the opportunity of bringing together single family versus high density in proportionate shares, a rent-owned population, a school district population, a coastal boundary population, and then I think I had categorized it as a business / CBD, community or central business district. And I think Councilmember Miller kind of put that as tourism kind of component. So I'm seeing about 3 to 5 different neighborhood ideas, again, fully respecting the free form idea of Mayor Pro Tem Bright and Councilmember Robert. But from a joint council grouping, so I'm hearing kind of a consensus of three of us for those for those 3 to 5 communities of interest. Is there anyone that wants to kind of debate one in, one out, or additional thoughts? And Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes. Well, I want to clarify, I am not at all adverse to any of these communities of interest whatsoever. I don't want to be writing this map. I have no problem with this, with these definitions whatsoever. So I think these make a lot of sense. I just don't feel that that I would want to submit a map in any way, shape, or form. And so, I mean, I understand the concept. I don't feel that it's something that I would want to submit a map or anything like that. So I have no problem with us as a body saying, you know, that these are the things that that we believe are. Anyway, I hope you understand what I'm saying there.
I completely understand. Maybe I can just kind of fill in a comment there to, just to make sure. And Mr. Bronson, Dr. Phillips, tell me if I go sideways and need some clarification. So, I mean, effectively what we're trying to do here tonight is, again, provide that 30,000 foot view of things that might be in common for a particular district, realizing there's going to not be uniformity among any of the districts. But then ultimately, as the maps are drawn by members of the public, members of the community in some fashion, and then are kind of reviewed by Dr. Phillips and his team, ultimately a series of maps are going to come back to us in the early 2022 timeframe for us to actually choose a particular map as part of this process. So I don't think we as individuals or we as a council are expected or perhaps we should make a pact amongst ourselves to not submit a map, but I don't know if that's something that is typically done. But ultimately, we are going to end up being the approvers of whatever district maps are come forward. So, Mr. Bronson, Dr. Phillips, anything to add there?
You captured it well, Mr. Mayor. This is an open process. The public will have every opportunity to submit maps as part of the process. We will review them. We will analyze them. We will draft potential maps for the council to consider in January, and then the council will be the decision-making body in adopting the final map that will define our district election beginning in 2022. That is the final action of the council that will be done by next March, and really we'll put into place the election process from that point forward.
And so maybe a question for Dr. Phillips is, have you worked in communities who have gone through this process in the past who have kind of made a public comment and said, we as a council, as individual council members or elected officials, will not generate maps? Has there been that opportunity? And I'd like to see if there's A, if that's a consideration, and B, if we'd like to go down that path.
I am aware of the independent commission that is drawing the districts for Santa Barbara County. They have this made a pact unofficially to not submit any maps because they want the public to be the and NSS consultants to be the only ones submitting maps. But it's not something that is obligatory. As long as the only thing that is prohibited is from you producing any maps before the official census data is out, plus 7 days, I think. And so, but you you all are residents of the city and you have, it's in your right to submit a map as a member of the public. But when we present maps from the public, we will not include names. We'll just say map one, map two, map three, something like that. So even if one of you wants to submit a map, we won't say this is from a council member. But if you want to decide together not to submit maps, that's totally your prerogative.
Very good. I appreciate that. And I appreciate Councilmember Miller understanding what I was doing when I was tearing up my practice maps and putting them aside.
Mr. Mayor.
But Mr. Hale, it looks like you have a comment for us.
I sort of have to interject, I think, at this point.
Yep.
Yes. If you individually as a group all decide voluntarily not to submit maps, that's fine. Can the council make a decision or a pact to preclude a council member from submitting a map if they choose to do so? I would say you're stepping into an area that's maybe legally indefensible. You have a First Amendment free speech right and a right to submit maps such as this on your own if you choose to do so. Whether it remains anonymous or not, you know, that's a decision for somebody other than me. But each and individual council member they choose would have the legal right to submit a map if they choose to do so.
Okay. Definitely appreciate that clarification. So I see council member or Mayor Pro Tem Bright, your microphone is on.
I was not trying to press that on anyone else.
I took your comment and ran with it. So I just thought that it realizing that some of the conversation we were having and perhaps that was a possible place to land, but I definitely agree with Mr. Hale that we all have individual rights. But So getting back into the communities of interest. So I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add there.
So I really please don't. I was not trying to force that on anybody else. That was just my opinion. So anywho, that was only my opinion. So. Anywho, I'm more than comfortable with these communities of interest, and I'm happy to go forward with this as it is. So I think we've mushed around with this enough, and we can just move on as far as I'm
very
concerned.
Good.
So okay. Thank you very much.
So just by a show of unmuted microphones, anybody else have anything to share? Not seeing anybody come forward. Let me go ahead and kind of summarize for Dr. Phillips and Mr. Bronson, make sure that we're all captured everything that we've discussed this evening. That provides an adequate direction and see if there's anyone who disagrees with what I'm about to say. So I think our communities of interest have focused around a single family residential component where possible, which might be distinct or separate from a high density component. So kind of a zoning determination there or occupancy, and then rental versus ownership, school district boundaries, coastal boundary, as well as a commercial business/tourism boundary or potential district. So just by a quick show of thumbs, anybody have any, everybody okay with that? Or do we want to add anything or subtract anything? Okay, looks like we've got consensus there, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Bronson, Dr. Phillips, to see if there was anything else you needed from us from a definition standpoint of communities.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. And that lands on the outcome we were looking for this evening, to really hone in on the communities of interest that the council as a collective body arrived on. And you all completed that task. So congratulations to you. Well done to the council. And if I can just maybe clarify something, is this order in a rank order, starting off with the first one mentioned, which was single family residential versus multifamily residential down to business district and tourism? Is that a rank order, or is it an order of equal weight for all five of them?
I'll just speak for myself and see if there's consensus. Was that was just an equal rank order for me. There wasn't a priority of one sector over another. Anybody have any comments, concerns? Looks like we have consensus on that.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that so that we will treat those all equally and work doing our best, and really Dr. Phillips and his team, in coming up with some potential maps that help address those different communities of interest that the council has now defined as guiding this process. So Dr. Phillips, is that a fair statement?
Yes, this will inevitably involve trade-offs because some communities of interest conflict with others. The most notable example I see right off the bat is if you want to have the school attendance areas, that boundary is Grand Avenue. But if you want to have the one built around the central business district, that would be keeping Grand Avenue together. So, but that's the beauty of this process. We get to propose different map alternatives to you, and you can see how they look and decide for yourselves which one seems to do the best of satisfying all of these different criteria to the best degree.
Very good. Okay. So I appreciate that. As we continue to go through the process, we will see where this all unfolds. Thank you for your patience with us on our first two public hearings. I wish you luck in your other endeavors of, I know you're going to be with our friends in Arroyo Grande tomorrow night. And it'll be interesting to see how their process goes in comparison to ours, as they are a little bit of a more spread out community, and see where that discussion goes. So with that, we will close discussion on item number six, because I think we've captured everything we needed to do there. And that'll take us to our regular business items. And I'll say thank you to Dr. Phillips for joining us tonight. We'll see you again in the fall. Next, we have regular business items, which we don't have any this evening. And I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if there's any members of the public on the line for our second round of public comment. And if anyone has called in at 805-321-6639.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to our council members for our committee assignments. So let's, our committee assignment report. So let's go ahead and turn to Mayor Pro Tem Bright for her assignment, our committee assignment reports.
Thank you. I had briefly, I had an integrated waste management meeting, and I'd say the most significant item was to appoint Pavel Ogren as interim director, and after quite a bit of discussion, that was passed 8-3. So he will serve as interim director. The supervisors Compton, Pichon, and Arnold dissented, but he will serve until another director is placed in that spot. So that was really the most significant item on that agenda. And I think that'll suffice for my committee report. Thank you very much.
Very good. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Robert for see if he had any committee meetings this time.
That was passed.
No, nothing to report at this time. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller.
Yes. There was a homeless services oversight council meeting on Wednesday, the 21st. So a list of recommended organizations for homeless housing assistance and prevention program funding will be submitted to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors in August for final determination. Once final determination has been made, funding will be available to those organizations in September or October. Emergency housing vouchers were made available to the Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo. So new landlords that sign up for partnership with the Housing Authority will be awarded $4,000 for their first lease, and any subsequent leases will be awarded $1,000 incentive. Anyway, if you are a landlord, sign up with the Housing Authority. It's a good thing for folks who are homeless or in imminent danger of being homeless, because you will receive these incentives. It's good for you and good for these families. Thanks so much.
Very good, and I do want to say congratulations. I did see that the board did authorize your Zone 3 Advisory Committee appointment as well, so you can now be an actual voting member of that committee.
Thank you.
And then Councilmember Rushing is our alternate to that, and he was appointed with board action on that as well. So that takes me over to Councilmember Rushing for any committee assignments from his side of the House.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One report from the South County Chambers of Commerce at their Government Affairs Committee. We had a Mr. Brendan Clark join us from the SLO County Public Works Department to talk about the situation with water in general for San Luis Obispo County. As I believe we all remember, our council recently enacted a stage one emergency on water, and that is the case throughout the county. Water from the past year was significantly down upwards of 51%. The capacity at Lopez is currently at 34%. We are still above the low reservoir response plan, but that's not outside of the realm of issues. So everything here just literally underscores the need for conservation from our community, taking this seriously, not watering during the hottest part of the hours, not letting water run off, being mindful of your use in general, and at the very least for our council and for our neighboring communities, moving forward with the Central Coast Blue Project. And that is my only communication from meetings. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that. And I did understand that the Zone 3 Advisory Committee did make a recommendation to the board to enact the LRRP, the Low Reservoir Response Plan. And it looks like that action could be taken by the Board of Supervisors as early as August. So I just had two committee assignments. One was the Five Cities Fire Authority. We had a number of items to consider, which was adoption of several union contracts, labor negotiated contracts with the unrepresented as well as the represented employees. So there is the contracts in place for both of those groups. And then also the chief did provide at the board's request a fire station cost data analysis for comparing the Five Cities Fire Authority to Cal Fire Pismo Beach contract, and how a single fire station model could work in South County. Spoiler alert, it's much more expensive, but I did have a possible request if the council so chooses to have the chief come give a presentation on that that fire station cost data analysis, so we can kind of see how it would impact Grover Beach specifically. I do recall that both Oceano and Arroyo Grande are expecting to agendize it. And so I'd like to see if our council would like to have an update from the chief on that in the near future. Anybody have any concerns or comments about agendizing that? Okay, so it looks like seeing consensus to go ahead and agendize that. So we'll bring that back. I'll let the city manager work with the fire chief on that to bring that back. The other meeting I had was the South SLO County Sanitation District, where we did have a similar meeting agenda, which was approval of represented and unrepresented employee contracts. And so that is both agencies are under contract with their staff for the next several years. The only other item is the redundancy project is fully under construction, is going forward well, is on time, on budget, on schedule. And at some point in the foreseeable future, there is an opportunity to have some sort of media event once it gets to a point to where there might be something to look at and actually see from that project standpoint. But you can go to the district website, and they do have a time-lapse narrative that does show the progress to date, which is a lot of dirt moving and some little bit of stone pile driving. So it's not quite coming out of the ground yet, but it is preparing the foundations to do exactly that. So those are my committee assignments. So that'll take us to our League of California Cities Policy Committee reports. I don't have anything too active since our last time we've met, but I do have a note here to call on the city manager under League of California Cities. So I'm not sure if you had something to share on that, Mr. Bronson.
Not specifically, other than just that the annual conference is coming up in September, and we're looking forward to having a city delegation at the annual conference in Sacramento, first in-person conference in quite a while. Nice chance to come together, interact with our fellow city officials from around the state.
Very good. Thank you for that. That'll take us to our council communications. So let's see if anyone has anything to share this evening. So I'll start with Councilmember Rushing. Anything to share?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've got two items today. First was that I did receive some correspondence from a former resident and current landowner from the 800 block of Front Street down by the eucalyptus groves in Grover Beach, with concerns about the cormorant's nesting and the amount of cormorant guano that is involved on the city streets, and wanted to open it up to city staff for any additional thoughts or comments about what might be done about that, possibly moving forward. I know there's a lot of backstory there, and there's a lot of issues from various organizations, but just sort of wanted to broach the subject as gently as possible. And then my second, on a more positive note, this is the last week of the Grover Beach Buy Local program in partnership with the South County Chambers of Commerce. As a whole, the program has brought in over $200,000 worth of revenue to the local economy, specifically our small businesses. Anybody at all that's listening at this point, for every $100 you spend at our small businesses, you can select from over two dozen local businesses to receive a $25 gift card. And for the last week of this program, they're also throwing an additional $25 gift card from a business of their choosing. So spend $100, get $50. I know I got a couple in the mail just last week, and we thoroughly enjoyed our lunch from Fuego. Thank you very much. Those banh mi sandwiches are absolutely fantastic. So, and that's all I have for today.
Very good. Thank you for that. And before I turn to other council members, let's turn to the city manager, and he can provide us an update on the eucalyptus grove and the bird droppings area down by the Highway 1 and Front Street area.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And Councilmember Rushing, we are aware of the issues relating to cormorants on along Front Street and the various eucalyptus trees. Some are owned by the city, some are privately owned, some are owned by PG&E, others are owned by the railroad. It's really a mix of different property ownership. This is something we've been working on for about a year and a half, bordering 2 years. It's a tough situation, and we empathize with what the residents of that area experience with the bird guano, so to speak. The challenge is that these birds are protected under the migratory bird treaties, and under federal law, we can't touch the habitat that the birds are in while they're nesting. And that nesting season goes on for quite a while. that trees are also considered ESHA, environmentally sensitive habitat area, by the Coastal Commission because of the proximity to the butterfly grove just across Highway 1. So the trees also really can't be touched very well. We're working with the Coastal Commission to see if we can have some kind of common sense maintenance approach, but there were some trees taken out last year that were done unauthorized, unpermitted, and could be enforcement action by the Coastal Commission for the private property owner who did that work. So bottom line is that we're working on this, we're on this, we're doing some additional sweeping on the streets, and we're enhancing that sweeping work going forward. So we are invested in this. We're looking into how to make this better, and we'll report back to the council with more information.
Thank you for that update. Next, I'll turn to Councilmember Robert for any council communications from his side.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, the Exploration Discovery Center opened up, and it was a huge success. I'm proud to report that the kids are coming in droves. It's an amazing place. If you haven't had an opportunity to stop over there, you should do so. Debbie Ugalde is doing a fabulous job, and the kids, as I said, are just having a great time. The Egyptian pyramid, which is about 30 feet tall and back, has a dark, dusty tunnel leads into the mummy's room where the bones are and artifacts of the time, the Egyptian time. They have aquatics in the back with turtles and koi. I think her son even brings a couple of ducks up on the weekends sometimes. And they can play out back where all the electronic waste used to be is now more of a playground with a music room. And it's just turned out to be a fabulous place. And we're so happy the community is really utilizing us to its full potential. And we look forward to having that available for everyone. So come on down, check it out. It's over by Ramona Park. It used to be the old fire station, Grover Beach. And it's just turned out to be really, really fabulous. So thank you, community, for everyone coming in. Enjoying it. Thank you.
And remind me, Councilmember Robert, there's a ribbon cutting or a grand opening on August 6th at 10 a.m. Is that correct?
That's correct. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mayor, for getting that in there. So if you can come at the ribbon cutting, that'd be great. August 6th at 10 p.m. 10 a.m. Don't come at 10 p.m. Don't be there. Maybe some homeless people. But otherwise, yeah, show up and it'll be great. We're going to have it also in Stone Soup if it happens. We're hoping Stone Soup happens here next month. We will have it open so you can come in and enjoy that also. And a reminder, it's not a place where you drop kids off. It's a place where the kids actually interact with their parents and go through all these areas. They have a veterinarian area. They have a baking area. They have all these little areas that kids just love. And they have these little, you know, those little trucks you ride around in the cars that you sit on and ride. They ride out front all over the place, and they're just really enjoying it. So thank
you. Nice.
That's it.
Thank you for that update. So next we'll go to Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. Nothing for me to report.
Okay. Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Well, I had a comment regarding the good work on the intersection at Grand Isle Park. Marvelous it was. And then I had a number of calls about the fireworks, so not how great they were. That's about it. So,
very good. I just had a couple of communications, one of which is to remind folks that even with this wet stuff falling from the sky in a weird July rainstorm, it is not nearly enough to even come close to ending our drought declaration. And to, as Councilmember Rushen mentioned, please conserve and to use water wisely. While it was nice to have that that smell of rain in the air, it didn't fill up any reservoirs to an extent where it's going to provide any help. We need a lot more than that. So please stay on the conservation bandwagon. So. The other comment I had is great attendance at our Sizzling Summer Concert Series over the last several weeks, and we've had great comments from folks appreciating being out and about and enjoying the music, enjoying the food trucks that are in attendance, and we even did a little shout out yesterday and found out that we actually have people from all over the nation that actually joined us. We did a kind of a progressive who was the furthest away, and I had gotten to Texas when and I said, okay, cool, we got someone from Texas. I will buy you a T-shirt, and you can take Grover Beach back with you to Texas. And not as soon as did he come up and pick out his T-shirt, then three people from Wisconsin and three people from North Carolina came up to the booth. So I bought quite a few T-shirts yesterday for people that that are going to take them back to their communities throughout the nation. So great to see that. Great to see the concerts coming back and people enjoying that. And as a opportunity for the Rotary Club of Grover Beach to raise some funds for their programs, as well as there's people coming out and dancing and being outdoor, enjoying the air and the community as well. So next we have our city manager's reports and comments. I'll turn it over to our city manager for anything he wants to share tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just very briefly, in the spirit of ribbon cutting, we are pleased to have our 16th Street Park Playground renovation ribbon cutting coming up on August 3rd. The same night as National Night Out, as Chief Peters mentioned earlier tonight. More details to come to the council, but we would love to have you out there. The playground's been a huge hit. We had a soft opening a few weeks ago that's been anything but soft. It's been packed. The playground has been the place to go to for the 15 and under crowd, and we've gotten so many positive comments from the community members. Just kudos to our staff for their work in delivering this project. Kudos to the council for your leadership in having the best playground in the Five Cities area, hands down. So well done, council, in helping us achieve that. We also have a lot of projects underway. As Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Bright mentions, Oak Park, West Grand Avenue intersection improvements have really taken some significant steps to help improve the overall safety of our busiest intersection in the city. A lot of good work that's been done there. We have street improvement projects that are going forward across the city, water main improvements, and I'm proud to say that the South Oak Park project from West Grand Avenue to Mentone Avenue is out to bid right now. So that will be coming to the council for award of contract likely in September, and then construction starting in the fall for our first major street project that we have going forward. And that's possible through the additional revenue we've generated through Measure F20, cannabis, and other tax revenues as well. And then lastly, I'll echo the mayor's comments on the summer concerts. They are the place to be on Sunday afternoons. Up to 1,000 people are attending these concerts. They're not hidden anymore. They've been discovered, and they are the place to be on Sunday afternoons. Great comments, great kudos, and a wonderful community event. And lastly, Stone Soup is happening August 28th and 29th. It's put on by the Clark Center this year. They are coordinating the event, working with the chamber and working with the city, but we look forward to a great event coming up in about a month. Thank you very much, Council.
Very good. Thank you, sir. So next I'll turn to the city attorney, see if there's any reports or comments he needs to make this evening. And you are still muted, sir. There you go.
I was trying to get that little cursor up there to click it. sometimes those are difficult tasks. I actually do have one. We have, for the most part, with the exception of the decades-long Napomo adjudicated aquifer litigation that's been going on. We have no current pending litigation. Everything has been settled and resolved. So we may have some code enforcement coming in the near future, but as of right now, there is nothing pending before the court other than that one that's been going on for decades. So I just wanted to apprise you of that. And also the city manager and I will be both at the League of Cities conference. So we look forward to working with you and maybe doing some socializing one evening. So.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. I don't see any closed session this evening. So we are dark in our first meeting in August, and so the intent, as the city manager mentioned, at the top of the agenda, is for us to be back in person. That will, of course, be dependent upon COVID numbers and any restrictions that may follow from that. But I hope to see everyone in person at our city council meeting on August 23rd. And with that, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Have a good evening. Thanks.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.